This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
But make no mistake about it, whether Kevin Cheveldayoff is able to convince Jacob Trouba to stay in Winnipeg or he doesn't, he's going to be able to get a great return in terms of a trade because of where Jacob Trouba is in that age group and the type of player he is.
TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button discussing Winnipeg Jets defenseman Jacob Trouba. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the season finale of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can reach us in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. Quick reminder, in the final 30 minutes of today's show, we're going to take your phone calls. That's at 204-780-1290. So again, we're starting at 10:30 this morning. We want to hear from you. We're going to end the summer on a little bit of a bang, so we want to hear from you for the final 30 minutes of today's show. Without further ado, I say good morning to Dave. I say good morning to Ezzy. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Saturday morning.
Before we get into Jacob Trouba, can we talk about that shirt for a second?
It's a T-shirt.
I really like it.
Thank you.
I really like the color.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. It was
I didn't know where Ezzy was going with that. I thought it could be a little aggressive.
I thought there might have been an insult coming, but I appreciate that so far I have not detected the insult.
Well, it's like an electric yellow. I really like it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a brighter shirt than some people might wear, but I appreciate the compliment.
Yeah,
Thank you.
It looks comfy. It looks like it fits really nicely.
Yeah, so far.
I might get myself one of those.
It was a whopping $3. Literally, $3 in the discount bin. So, you can probably scrape together a few shekels, and maybe you and I can be twinsies.
Dave, I like that price even more. $3.
$3.
Yeah, you think Ezzy would give a compliment to the shirt I bought at the draft in New Jersey, I think it was?
Yeah, but we've seen your Whaler shirt for a lot of time now.
Shirt.
This is a new shirt.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, thank you. Now, somebody who can't afford, let me just do some simple math. If the shirt was $3 and he's making $5.5 million, he can afford a lot of shirts of a bright yellow color. That's Jacob Trouba. When we were on air last Saturday, we were waiting to see if it was going to come down to the arbitrator's ruling or if the Jets and Jacob Trouba's representation by the name of Kurt Overhart were going to be able to hammer out a longer-term contract. Well, we now know, and we knew on Sunday afternoon, that they weren't able to do that, and Jacob Trouba will play the 2018-2019 NHL season under a one-year $5.5 million contract extension. We've been talking about this really for close to a year at this point in time, maybe 7-8 months. Now that it's all said and done and we know that Trouba is going to play on that one-year $5.5 million deal, what are your immediate thoughts as a result of that arbitrator's ruling?
Well, we knew it was coming, right? And you mentioned that, we were on air 24 hours before the arbitrator's decision came out. So we knew that there was a good chance that it was going to be a one-year deal. We knew it wasn't going to be a two-year deal. So it was either going to be long-term or a one-year deal. And this is not what the Winnipeg Jets wanted. It's not what Jets fans wanted. And the long-term future of Jacob Trouba in Winnipeg is really up in the air right now. When you consider that after this contract expires, you can either trade him, and I guess in theory you could sign him to another one-year contract, but that's not going to happen.
Or a longer-term deal.
Right, and that's what the Jets wanted, and that's what the Jets will want after this contract expires. But for Jacob Trouba, guys, this is great for him because he missed 27 games last year, and obviously his offensive numbers have not been where he'd like them to be. And we know that he kind of wants around that $7 to $7.5 million range. I mean, there's going to be a lot of speculation about Jacob Trouba's future, guys, but as it stands right now, he's a member of the Winnipeg Jets, and I don't think that there's any chance that the Jets trade him this year. Who knows what happens after that? But it's obviously long-term not what the Jets wanted. They wanted to lock him up to 6+ years.
Dave, same question that I gave to Ezzy. What were your immediate thoughts upon hearing that Trouba, the Jets, weren't able to come to a long-term deal, that he was going to play on the one-year contract, putting him 1 year away from unrestricted free agency?
My first thought was I'd like to be that arbitrator, and it really took him 48 hours
to split the difference?
To split the difference.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I would... think that Ezzie's points are valid. I think that the Jets obviously wanted this guy. They think he and Josh Morrissey are going to form a core of this team for years to come, in theory. And, the other thing is you don't want people like ourselves asking questions throughout the season, becoming a distraction, asking about the contracts. Now, obviously, it'll happen a little bit the first time Jacob Trouba's in Winnipeg, but aside from that, I don't anticipate it becoming a constant theme. And the fact is that he is a member of the Jets for next year. I'm with Ez on that. I don't think he gets traded because they need him for a run. And you're not going to trade him for the exact same player because you're not going to find the exact same player. You might get something somewhat similar, someone who's in a similar situation around the NHL that wants a different opportunity. But again, from the Jets' perspective, Jacob Trouba is a member of the team for the next year because, again, if you think that you're going to make a deep run challenge for a Stanley Cup, then a player like that has to be part of it. And I do agree with Ezzie also that this is really an opportunity for Jacob Trouba because he didn't play all the games last year. And so you're thinking to yourself, if you're him, this is my opportunity. And similarly from the Jets, I mean, it's a gamble. It's like the Connor Hellebuyck situation. It's a gamble. And so you know that, okay, you give a guy a one-year deal, the guy performs out of his mind. Well, you know what? Guess what? You're going to have to pay for that. But if he doesn't play out of his mind and he's given the opportunities, right? That's the key. Of course, a player can argue, well, I wasn't given power play role. I wasn't given big minutes. Therefore, I couldn't, perform to those levels, but I'm still this type of player in theory. If he's given those opportunities and he doesn't hit the levels that he would think he's going to hit, well, then he's not worth $7 million. He's not maybe worth $6 million. And the Jets do better because they say, look, we're going to give you 5.5 or we'll give you 6 for 6 years. Whatever it is, it's an opportunity for both sides. But if you're the Jets, in theory, maybe you pay a little bit more for a guy who starts to get to that next level in his game.
Let me ask you guys this question. So there's a lot of consternation after the one-year deal, of course, and people who have no knowledge of the situation would say, well, he just doesn't want to be here in Winnipeg. He doesn't want to play in Winnipeg. He doesn't want to make a long-term commitment to the Winnipeg Jets. Does anybody have any evidence that would, or what is your personal opinion that regarding Jacob Trouba and what he wants in terms of a long-term future, be it here in Winnipeg or be it in another city in the NHL?
Well, Trouba, after the year, said that he wanted to be here and he wanted to sign a long-term contract. I mean, that's on the record. He spoke with the media, so there's no indication that he doesn't want to be here. We know that a couple of years ago, they requested a trade, Trouba and his agent, Kurt Overhart, but that was 2 years ago. So just because he signed a one-year contract, and that's not out of the realm of possibility here, guys, that he signs a long-term contract after this one expires.
He can sign a contract extension effective January 1st,
right.
2019.
Right.
That's the rule. When a player is playing on a one-year deal, he can't sign an extension until the beginning of the next calendar year.
Right. So Trouba can still be a Jet long-term. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm leaning towards that's not going to happen. That's just my own personal opinion, but it still is possible that after this contract expires, or as you mentioned, Drew, January 2019, the Jets can sign Trouba to a 6 or 7 or 8 year deal. But going back to what Dave said about, this possibly being a distraction, I think it was way more of a distraction a couple of years ago. And I don't think it's going to be a distraction for this group, because now this group has had playoff success. They knew that there was a good chance that Jacob Trouba was going to sign a shorter term deal. It's not like this is coming out of left field.
I think it would be a distraction if he was becoming a UFA at the end of this season, as opposed to another year of an RFA situation.
Right, and I think, Drew, it'll become more of a distraction in February, closer to the trade deadline, when you start to hear, well, maybe are the Jets going to move him? I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't think the Jets are going to move him this year, especially when you consider that this team is a Stanley Cup contender. I mean, they went all the way to the Western Conference Final. There's no reason to believe this team won't be just as good next year or better. So I don't think they're going to move their top pairing right side defenseman at any point during the season. That includes prior to the trade deadline.
You know what stands out to me, Dave, is that really since the arbitrator's ruling, there's been basically radio silence from both sides. You haven't heard from Kevin Cheveldayoff really say anything about the negotiation. You haven't really heard from Kurt Overhart. The only thing that Kurt Overhart said, and I believe he said it to Mike McIntyre of the Free Press, he said, it's been a very long 3 weeks, which to me says that these two sides, Overhart on behalf of Trouba and Kevin Cheveldayoff on behalf of the Winnipeg Jets, were trying to hammer out a long-term deal. Because if Jacob Trouba wasn't interested in a long-term deal, if he was only interested in a one-year contract or a two-year contract, then it wouldn't have been such a difficult 3 weeks. So to me, they were trying to come to the agreement on a longer-term contract. Overhart implies as much by saying it's been a long 3 weeks, and they weren't able to do it right now, simply because the Jets have a lot of salary cap issues. They have a very tight budget. Trouba, we know Overhart has been a very aggressive agent in his history. He probably wants that $7 million if his client is going to commit long-term to the organization, or maybe a little less, whatever it might be. In any event, I think that both sides tried very hard to come to an agreement long-term. They couldn't. So maybe what this arbitrator's ruling does, it allows both sides to take a pause, take a step back. There's no point in negotiating, really, between now and January, because you can't sign anything. And then maybe, you know, come January 1st, both sides come back to the table and are able to start to talk to each other and try to negotiate a long-term deal again. To me, the fact that Trouba signed 1 year now does not preclude the possibility of him signing a longer-term extension.
No, I think your points are very valid, Drew, and I think that's exactly what we'll likely see. And that, you know, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, like, people sometimes get way too wrapped up in these things and think immediately because a guy doesn't sign a 7-year team-friendly deal that he doesn't want to be in the city.
How dare he not sign a team-friendly deal?
No, and you know, it's true. Like, the reality is these guys have finite careers. And, yeah, you, of course, want to do something that's going to allow you to, you know, ultimately challenge for a Stanley Cup. But at the same time, you know, the fact of the matter is that you're going for your market value. And that's what you're, that's why you have an agent. That's why 99% of these guys have agents other than Drew Doughty, who negotiated his own contract. But the fact is that most of these guys, you know, I mean, and it's, when you have a representative like Overhart, people don't like him. But the reality is that he fights hard for his clients. You know, obviously he's incentivized because he gets paid based on that. But at the same time, you know, you have these guys who are there's a reason why they hire agents, is that to do this. And then he doesn't want to have to deal with this stuff. He just says, okay, you know, I'm going to play hockey and I'll, you know, allow my agent to work through the process with the management.
It really comes down to, guys, and you mentioned it, Drew, it comes down to the dollars. And when you're facing a salary cap crunch, the Jets are facing a salary cap crunch right now, right?
Absolutely.
Because Josh Morrissey still has to be signed, and a few other players have to be signed.
The crunch will start, I think, more next year when Line A and Wheeler and everything else. Yeah,
exactly. When Line A is making $10 million, $9 million, whatever he makes next year, I mean, he's going to make a lot more than he's going to make the coming year. Mm-hmm. So Line A is going to be making 9 or 10. Wheeler's going to be making, I don't know, 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that extra, we talked about it last week. I mean, there's a big difference between $6 million a year and $7 million a year when you're up against the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that means, like you said, that the Jets don't want Jacob Trouba here long term, but it's really hard. I mean, look, Chevy already had to trade away Steve Mason and Joel Armia. And sure, you could say that, you know, he was happy to trade away Steve Mason because you don't want to pay a backup goaltender $4 million a year. But the reality is, I think he had to make that trade even if they didn't re-sign Paul Stastny.
It would certainly gave them some more flexibility that's not going to hurt them long term. You know, it's a really interesting situation. You have a player betting on himself. You have a general manager who has a very, you know, tight window. And you know what? If Trouba comes out and he gets 45, 50 points this year in maybe some expanded opportunity, maybe he plays a full season, I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff will have a problem paying him.
That's what I said in my answer to you.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't think it's a negative if you're the team. I mean, obviously, you need a certain amount of cost certainty, as you just touched on, Drew. But at the same time, you know, you ultimately want your players to have success because then you're hoping that your team is having success.
And no player should ever be denigrated for betting on himself and for not accepting what they think that they're not worth. And if they're delusional, so be it. They'll find that out in an unrestricted free agency situation. But more often than not, in this day and age in the NHL, as we saw last night with the Tom Wilson ridiculous contract, these players end up getting paid what they want by at least one dumb general manager throughout the league. And right now, Jacob Trouba is waiting for that one dumb general manager. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the week's news with the Winnipeg Jets, a lot of other contract signings. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Zekas sends it back for Ben Sherratt, quickly for Tucker Pullman. Wrister from the line, score! Tucker Pullman, did that get deflected, or is this Tucker Pullman's first NHL goal?
I think this was a seeing eye shot. This could be Pullman's first goal.
It was Tucker Pullman's first goal. Came against the New York Islanders back in December, if I'm not mistaken. He had one goal, one assist for the Winnipeg Jets on the Jets' blue line in limited action.
Fun Tucker Pullman fact, scored his first NHL goal before he scored his first AHL goal.
There you go. One of the little Dave Minuk trivia right there.
Yeah, right there.
He signs a 3-year contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets. He was an RFA this summer. 3 years, $2.325 million. It's an average annual value of $775,000. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, I have an interesting Tucker Pullman story.
Okay.
He got into a few games in the playoffs, and I think it was the series against the Nashville Predators, if I'm not mistaken, that he played those games. It wasn't in the series against Vegas, I know that. So it was either in the first round or the second round he got into a couple of games. And I was walking to Bell MTS Place, and obviously, you know, you had the whiteout street party happening. And I was a couple of blocks away, and there was a family in front of me. And I noticed that they had Jets jerseys on, but there was a Tucker Pullman UND T-shirt underneath that Jets jersey. So I kind of thought to myself,
Hang on. I got to stop you right there. How did you know what was underneath somebody's Jets jersey?
Well, no, you could, because it was see-through, like it was a white jersey, so you could see that there was Pullman 3 T-shirt under it.
Dave?
That seems believable.
Okay, you're okay with the story so far?
What's so weird about that?
I don't know. Forensic CSI Ezzy over here.
I hate to break it to you.
He's never seen someone wearing a jersey or a shirt, and then you can see what's under the shirt?
I suppose. I haven't paid that much attention to it. Anyways, go on with your interesting story.
It's a jersey. It's see-through. It's a white jersey.
Okay,
Anyway, so the white Jets jersey had a Tucker. The woman that was wearing the white Jets jersey had a Pullman shirt underneath it. So it turns out I was walking behind Tucker Pullman's family and his brother Colton, who also played for UND last year.
Right.
So it was really, I thought it was really special to see the whole family walking up to the whiteout street party to watch their son play in the playoffs. It was a very special moment. Think of how proud the parents were.
Dave, on a scale of 1 to 10, how interesting was Ezzy's interesting story?
Well, the only thing is I heard it firsthand at the playoff game. So he told me.
This is a repeat performance of the story?
I've heard it before, but I think it's an interesting... I think it's a good point. I think the fact is that there is, you know, I mean, especially remembering that this is a guy who's fairly local as hockey players get. So I think there is a special relationship that his parents have that they can drive up and is, you know, is, and we, our boy Brad Schlossman, who writes for the Grand Forks Herald, actually was the one who broke this news, tweeted out about it, I think earlier in the afternoon, about how they were working on a 3-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he always talks about how it's nice for that family because they are very dedicated. I think he had said that his Tucker Pullman's dad had knee surgery or something like that.
The day of the game.
And yeah, like literally.
Well, that
like,
was the other part of the story. That's how I confirmed that it was Tucker Pullman's family because Tucker Pullman's dad was on crutches. So I asked Brad Schlossman, who covers college hockey for the Grand Forks Herald.
Uh-huh.
I asked him, you know, do you know if Tucker Pullman's family is here? And then I mentioned the fact that it looked like, you know, his dad was injured. So yeah. I thought it was
okay,
a
your
very,
story's getting gradually
it,
better.
It was a very nice moment. You know, you see, you know, a 24-year-old kid, 25-year-old kid, you know, this is his first ever NHL playoff game.
Yeah, yeah.
And his parents have all of this pride. And,
yeah, no, I agree.
You know,
I'm with
you. And they were, you know, experiencing, I think, the whiteout street party probably for the first time. So
yeah.
Your story's pretty awesome. Your story's getting better. Your story's getting gradually better as we extract more information from it. Let me ask you guys this, though. So Tucker Pullman signs that 3-year extension.
Let me tell you, that's a great contract for the Jets.
Can you explain to me what the incentive is for Tucker Pullman to sign a 3-year extension for marginally over the NHL minimum salary?
No. Well, I mean,
it was perplexing.
It was a perplexing
signing to me.
I mean, again, if you did that on the short term, I would understand it because then it's an opportunity to show what you can do when you're given the opportunity.
Right.
Now, conversely, the Jets could say he doesn't have a tremendous amount of experience. I mean, he's only played a handful of NHL games. So, you know, he was splitting his time between the Jets and the Moose, and he was in the press box quite a bit for Winnipeg. So, you know, they would argue that, you know, he's still an unknown commodity, but then the question would become, if they make that argument, you think to yourself, well, okay, then why am I going to give you 3 years of a deal? It's a good question. I don't know. We don't know the answer for why he was willing to. I mean, he said it himself. I shouldn't say that. He talked about how it's an opportunity for him to grow his game in the NHL. And when given the opportunity on the next go around, maybe he'll have that chance to kind of be that, say, look, I'm now one of your go-to guys.
And I think we should point out too, I believe, if I'm not mistaken here, his salary in the minors actually would be the similar salary.
It's a one-way deal,
and I believe even though the AAV is $775,000, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he does make more in the second and third years.
Yes, he makes $825,000 in year two and $850,000 in year three. The first year is $650,000.
Right.
But, I mean, he came last year. I mean, he signed the one-year deal after leaving college. Last year, his salary in the NHL was $925,000. So you can look at it as a bit of a pay cut. Strictly at the NHL level, it's not a pay cut at the if he plays at the AHL level.
Well, he wasn't making that money when he was in the AHL.
That's my point. That was his NHL salary. Right. Last year it was still a two-way level deal.
And remember, Drew, that they had to sign him out of college, and the point was that
he had leverage.
So, right. I mean, there's always the concern that you're going to lose a player like that.
To me, though, if you're Poolman, I just don't see why you don't sign that as a one-year deal, let's say, and maybe you play in the NHL. Maybe you play more than I think he played 24 games for the Jets last year. And I don't know if it's hard to tell exactly where he fits in on the Jets' back end entering this coming season. But if he plays more than 24 games, even if he plays 24 games, he could probably sign the same one-year contract again. It just seems to me that, to your point, Dave, you said it's a very team-friendly contract. And far be it for me to criticize, Tucker Poolman and the decisions he made. I just find the whole thing to be a little perplexing because he's not really allowing himself any room to grow with the contract.
Well, let's focus on Tucker Poolman as a player instead of the contract, because I agree with you. I expected Tucker to sign maybe for a little bit more. I don't know how much that is, maybe closer to $1 million a year. But when you talk about Tucker Poolman, I think right now on the right side, he's obviously buried a little bit behind Jacob Trouba, Dustin Byfuglien, and Tyler Myers.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely hope we see more of Tucker Poolman this year because, you forget he was a standout for UND, won the national championship, and he's now 25 years old. So I think he's ready to be that third pairing defenseman for the Jets. Now, we just mentioned, you're behind a bunch of good defensemen. The Jets maybe are one of the strongest teams in the NHL on the right side when you have Tyler Myers on your third pair there. Yeah. And you've got Jacob Trouba and Buff ahead of him. But I think, Tucker Poolman is a great defenseman. And, for a big guy, he moves really well. He's got an underrated shot, in my opinion. He plays that physical style of game. So his future is very bright with the Winnipeg Jets. And right now, as it stands, guys, yeah, he's kind of that, seventh or eighth defenseman right now. There's no way that you can put him ahead of Tyler Myers. There just isn't. So right now, as it stands, it's kind of uncertain how many games he will play in the NHL, but I think he will definitely stay in the NHL this year. I don't see him going down to the Moose.
I think the only asterisk I would put on your comments about Myers there is I wonder if the Jets might consider, and I think they probably are considering, maybe moving Tyler Myers to the left side to start the season, but who knows how that's going to play out.
Yeah, but then you have a glut of defensemen on the left side, right? So you've got you've got Joe Morrow and Ben Chiarot right now as your third pairing options on the left side, or Kulikov.
Sure.
Throw Kulikov in there. And then you've also got Sammy Niku, right? So if you're going to move Tyler Myers to the left side for most of the year, that means Sammy Niku is going to spend the majority of the year with the Moose. And, Dave will probably tell you that's probably not a bad thing. But the reality is they're much stronger on the right side than they are the left.
No question about that whatsoever.
I think you just always have to plan for contingencies. And obviously we know that no team is going to stay healthy throughout the year. And, Tucker Poolman will be given his chance. And I think last year was probably was less than ideal because they probably wanted him to spend more time in the AHL developing his game and working on his game than spending time in the press box. Obviously in NHL games, that's great. But, he spent a lot of time in the press box as opposed to with the Moose. So I think from that perspective, it was less than ideal. And I think that, we may see more of that this year until there's an injury that gives him an opportunity.
And how many NHL games, Dave, has Tyler Myers played on the left side? I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think it's a lot.
No, I think it would be. I mean,
but he was at.
I think it's an experiment as opposed to a certainty.
There were questions asked about that to, was it Paul Maurice or Kevin Cheveldayoff about Tyler Myers, and they said that there was a conversation had. I feel like it was Paul Maurice was talking about it during the Jets development camp, and he said that there was that they had that conversation, but whether that we actually see that come to fruition or not is an entirely different story. And the fact is, why would you move Tyler Myers to his left side when, just to get Tucker Poolman in? I mean, maybe, but I don't know. I don't see them trying to finesse it that much. So,
a couple of the other signings, Marco Dano signs a one-year, $800,000 contract. I mean, he was an RFA. He got into minimal games last year. Takes actually a bit of a pay cut, I think $50,000 less than he was making last season.
Well, with Joel Armia gone and, you know, a few other players not returning. I mean, Marco Dano probably has a much better opportunity this year to play on the fourth line than he did last year.
Well, he's got to show something when he gets that opportunity. I mean, he didn't really show much in his limited opportunities. We'll see if you know, that changes this offseason. And Brandon Tanev signs a one-year, $1.15 million contract. He'll be a UFA after the season. Your thoughts on the Tanev contract sort of quickly here before we have Ted Wyman joining us at the bottom of the hour.
Well, let's put it to our fans, the followers on Instagram. I posted the Hellebuck one, got big hits. I posted the Lowry one, got big hits. Posted the Tanev one, insane hits. I couldn't get over it. There were so many people liking the fact that he signed with the Jets. Now, maybe it was on the heels of the fact that Trouba had just gotten the arbitration ruling.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all happened the same day.
You know, it happened. That's what I'm saying. So perhaps folks were reacting to that. But no, I mean, look, Brandon Tanev had a really good season last year for the Winnipeg Jets. Seems to kind of get a little more of his offensive game going as opposed to the ball of hate, Brad Marchand style of game. You know, and although Brad Marchand obviously can score goals.
Yeah.
So,
first and last time you ever used Brad Marchand and Brandon Tanev
in the same sentence. They're small players who hit. That's kind of what I was thinking. But
yeah.
But the truth is that, you know, you need players like him who are willing to kind of do certain things for the team. And like I said, he's not a bad player on that fourth line.
When we come back, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is going to join us for some more Winnipeg Jets talk. And remember, the bottom of the next hour, about 60 minutes from now, we're going to open up the phone lines at 204-780-1290. When we come back, Ted Wyman for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the season finale of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to be off for the month of August, enjoying some quality family time and whatnot. We'll be back Saturday, September the 1st for 2 hours, and then the week after we return to our regular 3-hour time slot. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can still follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We'll continue to update everything there. Our website is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Ted Wyman. Ted covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Quite nice to be a part of your big season finale. Thanks very much for having me.
Our pleasure, Ted. Thanks for making yourself available on this Saturday morning.
Ted, how was Andrew Harris's wedding social after the Bombers game last night?
Well, you know, Andrew Harris, you know what? That guy is just so about Winnipeg, you know? So it's right that he should be part of a party like that every night, because seriously, the guy has just done so much with this team, and yet the funny thing was, he wasn't even the best Winnipegger on the field last night. That was clearly Nick Dembski.
What a catch.
Yeah, fantastic catch and fantastic run on his touchdown. Dembski just had a great game, the best game he's had as a Bomber and maybe his best as a professional.
You're listening to the Illegal Procedure Football Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Ted Wyman, our guest, will shift our focus back to hockey. Ted, we've spent much of the last 30 minutes or so talking about the Jets, of course, and talking about Jacob Trouba as he was front and center on everybody's mind, really, with the arbitration hearing having come and gone and the award coming down of 1 year and $5.5 million. You know, what were your thoughts after that sort of saga has finally come to an end? Is it fair or safe to call it a saga? And how close do you think the Jets and Trouba's representation came to maybe agreeing to a long-term deal before eventually settling on the one-year arbitrator's award?
Well, I sure don't think the saga has come to the end, Drew, that's for sure. Because this thing has dragged on for a long time already, and it just hasn't been a mix there between the Jets and obviously Kurt Overhard and Jacob Trouba. There's obviously something that's not on the same page, and here we end up with a player actually going to arbitration. It doesn't happen very often in the NHL anymore, especially with players of Jacob Trouba's ilk. So for it to come to that and now him be on a one-year contract and really have some cards to play to make his way out of Dodge if he wants to, that's certainly not the way the Winnipeg Jets would have liked to have drawn it up in the first place. So now I say the focus with him completely comes down to having an asset that they think they can use, which will help them win the Stanley Cup either next year or the year after that. And you know, this is their window. They have the best chance right now to do it, I think. They're a very good team. They were very close last year. And they may have, they got to take advantage of that while they can, because to me, the way everything has gone with Jacob Trouba, it doesn't seem like he's going to be here long term.
Ted, when do we expect Josh Morrissey to sign, and how many years do you think Josh Morrissey is going to get? Do you think it'll be a bridge year deal, or do you think it's going to maybe be a longer term 6 or 7 year contract, maybe 8?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously Kenny Weeb and I have been talking about that a lot and making calls and trying to see what we can find out about that, but not getting too much information. I would say that I'd say it's not something that too many people seem all that worried about, that it's going to happen one way or the other. But the question that you asked there, as is about the bridge deal or the long term, and I think right from the very beginning, we've all thought that Morrissey was a pretty good candidate for a bridge deal. If you can make it work with him, that could help free things up for some of the money that you know you're going to have to spend on other guys like Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor very soon. So I think if they could make it work, they should. But that being said, Josh Morrissey just might be their most consistent defenseman, and you really would like to have that guy under contract for a long time. And if you can even get him on one of those friendly-type deals that they've done before with guys like Scheifele, and pretty good deal with Nick Ehlers last year as well, I think you jump at it when you have the chance. So obviously it's been an incredibly busy summer for Kevin Cheveldayoff and his team, and the work is not done yet.
You know, Teddy, speaking of team-friendly deals, the team got Tucker Pullman signed to a 3-year contract. What do you think of that deal?
Well, it certainly is a good price, isn't it, Dave? I mean, and where does Tucker Pullman stand with this team? It's hard to say. I thought he played pretty well. He fit right into the NHL last year when he was needed. He was solid on that blue line. And obviously there are still 3 right-handed shot defensemen ahead of him on the depth chart at this current moment, but he did show pretty well playing on the left side when he had to, and I think he gives them an excellent bit of depth and a guy who can step in if there are injuries, and also when things change, because we know Tyler Myers only has 1 year left on his deal. We know right now Jacob Trouba only has 1 year left on his deal and will be an RFA again, but could be just 1 year away from, or 2 years away from walking away. So good to have a guy like Pullman as insurance in that area, and at a very, very team-friendly price, as you mentioned.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the Winnipeg Jets. Ted is with the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, now that, you know, I'm going to say the heavy lifting, with the exception of Josh Morrissey, of course, the heavy lifting is done for Kevin Cheveldayoff this offseason, and the Jets roster is looking pretty much what the Jets roster is going to look like entering training camp. How would you assess the performance of Kevin Cheveldayoff this offseason?
Well, that's an interesting question. It really is, because, you know, they didn't sign Paul Stastny. I think that was a priority. That was something they really wanted to do. They weren't able to do it. I think there are many people out there who believe that could be a blessing in the long run. Not that Paul Stastny wasn't a good player, but because this team needs to get so many guys under contract and have, you know, things freed up to pay guys like Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor down the road. And but they didn't get better. This team didn't get better in the offseason, on paper anyway. And so sometimes you have to look at that as an assessment of performance. I think that if you had to say that any GM had a real tough job this summer, Kevin Cheveldayoff certainly was one of them, because there was so many players that needed to be signed. And they did get Connor Hellebuck locked up, which obviously was a very good move given how well he played last year. And they've done, you know, they've kept other assets around that's going to make them a team that's very similar to the one they had last year. And of course, they've done this in the past. They have to trust that they have younger players who can step in and fill important roles. And I think they do have that. So not losing out on Stastny isn't going to kill them that way. But they did make a trade that cost them Joel Armia. They were very happy to get rid of Steve Mason's contract, but had to trade Joel Armia away to the Montreal Canadiens and to get rid of some salary. And then they really didn't have any opportunity to take advantage of that yet. So So we'll see how that plays out in the future. You might have to wait a little bit to decide whether you whether Kevin Cheveldayoff's performance was really strong this summer, average or maybe below average.
Teddy, sticking with Paul Stastny, obviously the second-line center after the trade deadline, after he was acquired from the St. Louis Blues, now that the Jets were unable to re-sign Paul Stastny, when the season starts, do you expect Brian Little to go back to that second-line center role? And do you see Jack Roslovic emerging as the season progresses as the second-line center, potentially?
I think that's a pretty good way to look at it, Ezzy, but I wouldn't rule out Jack Roslovic starting there. I think that they didn't play him at center much, if at all, last season. As I recall, he played a lot of right wing. But they did ease him into the NHL, give him a chance to get his feet wet. Obviously, he's a very talented young player. I haven't gotten a sense, and certainly, Dave, you'd be a guy to ask about this because you saw him so much at the AHL level. I haven't got a sense of how good of a playmaker he is. Because if he has that ability to be a really strong playmaker, you'd love to have him between Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers, who are two guys who really know how to generate offense. And obviously, Laine is one of the best finishers in the game. So if that's the case, then maybe that works. I don't think Brian Little is the greatest distributor out there. He's a bit of a scorer himself. So that's why Stastny was so perfect, because he is one of those centers who is really thinking about getting the puck to his wingers and helping set them up.
You know, Teddy, you mentioned it earlier in one of your answers, talking about players who are going to have to rise to the occasion and take the opportunities presented to them. Do you see, like, Marco Dano or maybe perhaps Nick Petan, who still needs to get a contract signed, potentially taking a spot here with the Winnipeg Jets?
You think I'm crazy to talk about Nick Petan, Dave?
That's why I threw him in there, Teddy. I tried to start with Marco Dano, and then I was like, I'll give him Nick Petan just in case.
It's the last show of the year, and now you're going to set me up for hate mail.
Again, that's Ted underscore Wyman on Twitter.
Well, you kind of get almost perplexed about the Marco Dano situation because the guy didn't play at all last year. He was a total spare part for this team, and here he is coming back for another year. But I guess he certainly played that role decently when he was in there. He put up a few points. Just obviously, I don't see Marco Dano right now projecting as being anything more than what he is. And I thought this before. If Marco Dano got taken by Vegas in the expansion draft last year, would he have become somebody like these many players who went to Vegas became players that nobody thought they were? Would Marco Dano become that guy? And I just don't see it. I don't know if you guys do, but I just don't see it. And so his position with this team, his standing of this team, just sort of perplexes me. But, I think they do believe they've got a good depth player there. And as for Nick Petan, where do you go with him, right? It's been a bit of an enigmatic career so far for Nick Petan. I think he's obviously a very talented player, but he didn't take advantage of his opportunities when he was in the NHL. Very little in production, and he had some chances. Maybe not playing on a top line. And obviously, I've talked about the Stastny situation where you want that distributor in the middle. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there right now saying, you've got that guy. Put Nick Petan between those guys, and maybe you've got something. Well, I don't hate the idea, but the guy has to prove that he can play a two-way game. Paul Stastny was probably the best two-way center the Jets had, right, in going down the stretch. In tremendous face-off man, all those things. Is Nick Petan that guy? Well, he's going to have to prove something, and he's going to have to prove it in a hurry if he wants to try to be that guy.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, we always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of the summer. We'll see you back again when it starts up again about 6 weeks from now in September.
So we're not doing the football show for all of August?
We can do it. We can do the football show.
All right. Well, you call me up in September, and I'll be glad to join you again. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, Ted. Take care of yourself, buddy. When we come back, we discuss some upheaval in Vancouver. Trevor Linden out. Organization questions abound. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
And then when you see a post like that, it doesn't take much to figure out that there was a disconnect between Trevor Linden and ownership in the sense of where are we going here.
Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province talking about Trevor Linden and his departure as Canucks president of hockey operations. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you love Bernstein's as much as we do, show them some love, leave them a five-star review on TripAdvisor. Again, another reminder, at the bottom of the next hour, 10:30 this morning, we're going to open up the phone lines, 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you about the Winnipeg Jets, your thoughts on the Trouba situation, your thoughts on who you think when Josh Morrissey's going to sign, anything to do with the Winnipeg Jets. We want to hear from you starting at 10:30 this morning, 204-780-1290. End of July is not your typical time to have some front office upheaval. We had it earlier this week in Vancouver, Ezra, as Trevor Linden, the Canucks president of hockey operations, decides to leave the organization. Sounds like there was some bad blood, a rift between ownership and Trevor Linden. And as a result, Linden said goodbye to Vancouver, an organization in which he was a hero for a lot of years. Seems like the Canucks as an organization are definitely floundering right now with ownership meddling and maybe getting too involved in some of the front office decisions. They had a very peculiar July 1st, signing a lot of veteran guys to long-term overinflated deals, and it seems like Trevor Linden had enough of that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Trevor Linden having enough of that or it was possibly the Vancouver Canucks ownership having enough of Trevor Linden. We don't know right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of speculation. Trevor Linden is the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. He's the most recognizable Vancouver Canuck.
You can throw in the Sedins.
Right,
yeah.
but long before the Sedins, there was Trevor Linden.
Yeah, 94,
right?
Exactly. Against the Rangers, absolutely.
Exactly. He was the captain of the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, you hear reports that for quite some time now, Drew, Jim Benning has been reporting directly to the Aquilinis,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't make sense because Trevor Linden is supposed to be running your hockey operations department, and you hear that, you know, for quite some time now, Trevor Linden has kind of just been a figurehead and really hasn't been running hockey operations. And you hear other stories that the Canucks were prepared to pitch on John Tavares, and Trevor Linden didn't like that. And you hear about a guy like Quinn Hughes, the Canucks' seventh overall pick, and you hear that
he announced earlier this morning, by the way, that he's going back to the University of Michigan.
Right.
He's not going to play in the NHL this season.
And, you know, prior to that, there were reports that, you know, Quinn Hughes was looking at possibly turning pro after being drafted, and Trevor Linden, you know, wasn't in agreement with that, and he wanted Quinn Hughes to go back to the University of Michigan. I think that's a good decision for Quinn Hughes, but the point was that he saw some of the other defensemen in the lineup, like Derek Pouliot or Hutton, or whether it's Troy Stetcher, Alex Edler, you know, Michael Delzato. He saw a lot of veteran defensemen there, and he's thinking, well, if I sign my entry-level contract, where am I playing?
Sure.
Right? Like, am I going to be a third-pairing defenseman? Am I going to be the seventh or eighth defenseman? So here, you hear a lot of stories that Trevor Linden and Jim Benning weren't seen eye to eye. And obviously, there's a lot more to this here, Drew. This isn't something that just all of a sudden came up. But most of the reports out of Vancouver are that Jim Benning has been running the show, and he's been running the show for quite some time. And Trevor Linden really wasn't seen eye to eye with Jim Benning and the ownership group because this is a team that's in the early stages of a rebuild.
Well, let me stop you right there. I would agree with you. This is a team it's been a bad hockey team. It's been a bad organization for a lot of years now. And most teams, I mean, I think most outside observers would look at the Canucks and say, you need to rebuild around your youth. You need to be rebuilding around Bo Horvat. You need to be rebuilding around Brock Besser. I mean, even Jake Virtanen to a lesser extent, but he's still a young player. And then they go out, Dave, on July 1st, and they sign Antoine Roussel to 4 years and $3 million a season. And they go out and sign Jay Beagle to 4 years and $3 million a season.
Well, these are third and fourth line guys, Drew.
I know, but they're taking roster spots. I think what the argument in Vancouver is, these are guys who are taking roster spots away from young players.
So your entire team can't be 23 to 25 year olds.
Well, but it's one thing for those guys, if you're signing those guys to 1 year deals to bridge a gap to signing those
guys. I agree.
To four-year deals
absolutely
is
agree.
Perplexing.
I absolutely agree. I was shocked when I saw that both of those players were, because we're talking about $3 million a year for 4 years, right? So I agree. Yeah. You sign them to 1 or 2 year deals.
And they bridge a gap to some of your young players.
I agree.
Sure.
I agree. Those contracts are probably not going to look too good
in
a couple
of
years. Well, especially, I mean, Jay Beagle was a big part of the Caps Cup team. I mean, he was a fourth line guy, but Jay Beagle's a good player. I agree that maybe you don't give him 4 years, but I don't think it's a bad contract. He can play a valuable role. I mean, guys, you still have to have veterans on an NHL team. You can't have an entire team of Bo Horvats, Jake Virtanens, and Brock Bessers. And sure, you've got some veterans there like Brandon Sutter and, you know, Sam Gagne. You've got some other veterans on the team, but I don't necessarily know, Drew, that those contracts that were handed out to Jay Beagle, Antoine Roussel, Tim Schaller, I don't think those contracts were why Trevor Linden and the Vancouver Canucks parted ways. I think there's way more to it.
Dave, what do you think about the fact that after this upheaval in Vancouver this week, ownership doesn't speak? All they do is tweet about it. Francesco Aquilini tweeted about Trevor Linden leaving the organization, sort of threw out Travis Green and Jim Benning to be the representatives of the Canucks. What are your thoughts about that sort of? Does the fan base need to hear from ownership when, as you mentioned, sort of the one of the faces of the franchise leaves the organization under a bit of mysterious circumstances?
Do they need to hear from the? What's he going to say? I don't know. Like, I just think I'm not one for words. I think actions speak a lot louder than words. And I think sometimes, you know, you hear these guys speaking and really, what are they saying sometimes? Like, they're going to speak and he's going to say all the right things. He's going to talk about how good Trevor Linden's been for the organization. Sometimes you have a different vision. So ultimately, at the end of the day, do you really need to hear from an owner who's just going to say what he wants to say? I don't know. I don't think there's any real need for that.
Here's Jason Botchford, a reporter in Vancouver and with TSN as well in Vancouver, talking about the situation in Vancouver.
Guys are billionaires. These guys own a $700 million business. They own a business that's also got a lot of emotional ties and connections with the people who live here. It's very important that you come out and you represent that business. So I think it's like super unfortunate that once again, you know, there was no representation from the Aquilinis to explain their side of things and what happened. I don't think it's on Trevor to do that. He's the one kind of, I can see where it comes from his point of view. He's no longer with the organization. But I think someone of that magnitude should be out there in front of this answering questions. And it's totally unfair. I mean, and to put Travis there, like that was, I didn't get that at all. Yeah. It wasn't a spot. It just wasn't, I think the world of the guy. I think that I think he handles the media extremely well. But that just wasn't the right spot for Travis yesterday. And Jim, I understand. I mean, Jim is the new czar of hockey operations here in Vancouver. We'll see how long it lasts. There's lots of theories out there about what happens next. But Jim definitely had to come out and say something. Unfortunately, he didn't have the answers that, about what happened with Trevor, but I do, like these guys are pitching it as everyone is on the same page. Like, look, if everyone's on the same page, this doesn't happen.
Dave, you were shaking your head there when you obviously heard something you didn't like.
No, I just think that it's easy for him to say that because, of course, it creates news for his show. But at the end of the day, I mean, the owner owns the team, and whether he chooses to speak or not, he doesn't have any responsibility.
So you don't think he has a responsibility to his paying customers?
No, I really don't. I think because the fact of the matter is, again, like I said, you want to see the results. And maybe, look, at the end of the day, if I'm the owner of an organization, if I'm the owner of anything and I decide something, well, ultimately, if it's a private business and I don't have to answer, then it's a private business and I don't have to answer. So, I mean, again, I think it's better to see what the organization plans to do from an actions perspective. Now, I mean, you could say you saw what the move was, and it was funny because you and Ez were talking about the contracts handed out, and that was kind of my point when we were talking about this last week on the show, is that I just thought those deals were too long. Not that you don't hand them out for 1 or 2 years, but for 3 or 4, I thought that was a little bit much. But again, like I said, I think Vancouver is a show, but I don't know. I just my personal perspective is you don't have any responsibility.
And regardless if the Aquilinis decide to speak publicly or not or address Vancouver Canucks fans, it's pretty clear that this organization has had some major issues for quite some time now internally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one expected Trevor Linden to leave the organization. Nobody saw that coming. No one.
Especially,
I mean,
if
you can find
July.
Me one person that saw that coming. So obviously, either something happened over the last couple of weeks, like a blow up or something like that, or the Aquilinis decided, okay, let's make the move now. But this is certainly unpopular with fans because Trevor Linden is like a god in Vancouver.
I think a lot of the decisions of the Canucks lately have been unpopular with fans, as the fans are looking at the organization and saying, what are we doing? What's the master plan? Are we just floundering? Are we trying to win with these veterans, but are we trying to get better and lose with this young talent? A lot of uncertainty in Vancouver, a lot of question marks as we enter about, you know, 6 weeks away from training camp and the start of the 2018-19 NHL season. When we come back, Jesse Marshall is going to join us. Jesse covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for The Athletic. We'll talk about the Penguins and their offseason. Remember, your calls still to come on the show in the final 30 minutes of this broadcast. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com in Pittsburgh, we're pleased to be joined by Jesse Marshall to talk about the Penguins. Jesse, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Jesse, you know, we're sitting here sort of end of July, really getting into the quiet time in and around NHL cities. You know, now that the Penguins are pretty much done with their business for the majority of the offseason, at least their big business, as we would expect, how would you determine the job that the Penguins have done this offseason with maybe retooling the roster to look to get back to the Stanley Cup heights after losing in the second round this past playoffs?
Well, you know, with the salary cap being what it is and with the Penguins having the star power that they have, the moves that they make are always going to be complementary, I think, at this juncture, barring any unforeseen blockbuster trades. So, they retooled the fourth line. They brought back Matt Cullen. They jettisoned almost every player that they had on the fourth line last season, just completely brought a new face to that bottom group of forwards and added in Jack Johnson defensively. Shed a little bit of salary by sending Connor Sherry and Matt Hunwick to Buffalo, which is ultimately what allowed them to bring Johnson in and retain all of their free agents. So it wasn't a lot of change. Jim Rutherford believes that the biggest free agent acquisition the Penguins made was an extra couple of months off, courtesy of their second-round exit this year. And it seems that the front office believed that this team didn't need a whole lot and that the time off that they were going to get was well-deserved and is really going to help this team moving forward in the next season. And the front office believes that, last year's exit was less about the roster and more about mental and physical fatigue.
Now, Jesse, you just mentioned Jack Johnson earlier in your answer. What did you think of the contract, and can he play the second pair on the left side for the Penguins this upcoming season?
So I think that you have to acknowledge that, first of all, he is coming off of a pretty rough year and a year that saw him get healthy scratched in Columbus going into the postseason. Jim Rutherford's belief on that scratching and that benching for Johnson was that it wasn't so much that he was playing poorly as much as it was that the Blue Jackets had brought in Ian Cole. They had Nudivara there on defense playing very well. And there just wasn't a spot for Jack Johnson. But I still think we have to acknowledge the fact that last season was one of his worst from a professional standpoint. So I think what the Penguins are hoping is that they can do for Johnson what they did for Justin Schultz and Jamie Oleksiak, which is going to be feed him third-pairing minutes, I think, to build that confidence back up, deploy him in a way that complements his strengths. I do think that there were times last season where the Columbus staff served Johnson a lot of heavy defensive zone starts against some pretty tough competition, and he didn't do very well in that environment. So I think for Mike Sullivan and the Penguins, I think they're going to look to reset the clock on him. I think they're going to, ultimately, I think they'll ask Jamie Oleksiak to move over He seems to be comfortable playing both sides of the ice. So I think Oleksiak will move over and Johnson will start on that third pairing. And that's, guys, just as much about Justin Schultz and Olli Maatta having had a really good year last year on that second pairing as it is anything else. And I think the Penguins right now may be just a little bit tentative to break up what Schultz and Maatta were able to accomplish last season, in addition to just kind of letting Jack Johnson dip his toe in the pool a little bit before they, you know, go giving him bigger deployments and bigger assignments.
So, Jesse, the Penguins got their final RFA signed in Tristan Jarry. They gave him a two-year deal, one way in 2019-20. So, obviously, I think the question would be his consistency. What do you see from him next season?
I think that last year you saw Tristan Jarry on a seesaw. His role starting out the season going in was clearly defined as Matt Murray's backup. Things didn't, you know, he didn't get a lot of game time in the early part of the year. Matt Murray gets hurt. Jarry comes in, didn't look great as the starter. Now you've got this internal competition between Tristan Jarry, an NCAA product, ex-NCAA product, Casey DeSmith. And Mike Sullivan really took to Casey DeSmith. And I don't know, guys, if that was as much about the fact that DeSmith outplayed Jarry as much as it was that they just wanted Tristan Jarry to have the opportunity to go back to the American Hockey League, take the bulk of those starts. His schedule was grueling. He was playing back-to-backs on a regular basis there. They just wanted to get him as much game time as they possibly could. Going into this season, Mike Sullivan has said that backup position for Matt Murray is wide open going into camp. There's a little bit of internal competition there between Jarry and DeSmith. I think that they, whatever they do, they just have to put Jarry in a situation where he's not seesawing back and forth. You guys mentioned the one-way deal, you know, coming up into next season, you know, on the contract. I think that if nothing else, you might see him start out this year in the American League again to get that game time. I think they're going to ultimately look at Casey DeSmith as the backup option. Is this going to require him to play less? So I think Tristan Jarry is still in a position where getting game time is really important for his development. I think it's going to solve some of those consistency issues he had. There were times last year where he was absolutely lights out. You could really get a sense of how well he tracks the puck, his athleticism side to side. And then there was other nights where it just seemed like the fundamentals couldn't come together for him. So that consistency needs to be ironed out, and it's only going to come with game time. So I think this might be the last year we see Tristan Jarry get a bulk of starts in the American Hockey League before he eventually comes up to back up Matt Murray on a permanent basis.
Jesse Marshall, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for TheAthletic.com. We're discussing the Penguins offseason. And Jesse, you know, that was a very extensive and great answer regarding goaltending, but Matt Murray, you know, needs to be the man in Pittsburgh, and he needs to be better than he was last season. You know, how does he improve upon what I think would be a disappointing season for most people's observations regarding Matt Murray?
Well, I think the first hope that Matt Murray will have is that the Penguins' defense shows up a little bit more this year than it did last year. They certainly did not make things easy on him, and there were points where the Penguins' defense, you know, Jim Rutherford often talked about that mental exhaustion. I think you saw it not only from Matt Murray, but just the Penguins' overall defensive approach wasn't there, and they really made life difficult on him last season. You have to also acknowledge that as a young kid, he went through just an onslaught of personal issues last year, not only with injuries to himself, but he lost his father in the middle of the season, and it was something that you could see just really devastating him. And despite the fact that the Penguins gave him, you know, basically, you know, 10 to 14 days off to kind of recover, at his age, it's still a big ask to ask him to come back and recoup in the middle of the year and regain his focus again. So I think that this year, coming in healthy, refreshed, with a new look D, and hopefully a team that's regained a little bit of that defensive focus, is going to go a long way to helping him. And that's just as much an environmental thing as it is anything else. I think Matt Murray would be the first to tell you he wasn't happy with his performance last year. But for me, there was just so many other things that were going on behind the scenes that it's a lot to ask a player of his age to deal with. And I think that coming in this year with that refreshed mindset, that new look defense is going to go a long way to helping him get back to where we've come, really become expected to, or what's expected of him based on his performances in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Jesse, I wanted to ask you about Daniel Sprong. He played a little bit for the Penguins last year. I mean, this is a prospect who put up some huge numbers in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and he put up really good numbers for Wilkes-Barre last year. Do you see him playing more of a full-time role with the Pens this coming season?
Jim Rutherford does. You know, that was actually, as the season ended, and we got to the locker room clean-out stage of the Penguins' exit, you know, that was one of the first things that Jim Rutherford said. He said, we believe that I, well, not we, I believe that Daniel Sprong is ready to for a full-time NHL duty. I think the question, guys, is whether or not Mike Sullivan believes that Daniel Sprong is ready for full-time NHL duty. What they've attempted to clean up with his game is very minor stuff, and it's all defensive-focused. And I think Daniel Sprong is a player that likes to shoot. He likes to play offense, and sometimes, I think as a result of that, you watch him defensively, and he's got a little itch to get out of that zone before everybody else and really kickstart that offense. And I think he's got to rein that in a little bit. And sometimes he anticipates that the play is about to break out of the defensive zone. He'll kind of loop up ice, you know, cross that blue line and look for that outlet past the neutral zone before the play has really matriculated itself to that point. So, but at the end of the day, for a player that has the offensive toolbox that Daniel Sprong has, you'll live with that. You know, you can clean that stuff up. The Penguins are huge, huge on video, and I know they've been serving him up a lot of video in the American Hockey League, really trying to dial his game in. The question is, where do you play Daniel Sprong? You know, this is a player that, you know, I think brings what Phil Kessel brings. You know, they're not particularly physical guys. They're not particularly adept defensively, but you get the puck on their stick, they can score from just about anywhere. And right now, the Penguins just have an absolute logjam in that top six. There's four or five different line combinations that you can come up with. I think that Daniel Sprong has a place in the team, guys, but it has to be in a role that is with other offensive-minded players. And Evgeny Malkin, a Sidney Crosby, I don't see a position for him on the third or fourth line of the Penguins. I think that's a waste of his talents. So it's going to be a big camp for him. And if he can show that dedication to you know, you're not looking for him to go out and lay guys out, you know, in center ice. You just want him to work a little bit harder in the boards, have a little bit more of a presence physically. And if he can prove to Mike Sullivan that he's ready to do that in camp, you may see him debut alongside an Evgeny Malkin to start the season.
Jesse Marshall covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Jesse. When we come back, Marty Biron is going to join us, talk a little bit about some goaltending, take a look around the NHL as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Remember, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to want your phone calls, 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you, your questions, your comments regarding the Winnipeg Jets. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Marty Biron. You know Marty as an analyst on MSG for Buffalo Sabres broadcasts. You know him from his work with TSN and RDS as well. Marty, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Marty. How about yourself, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's a beautiful day. May go golfing. Got some work to do, but I can't complain.
You can't complain. It's a good plan. I like where your head's at. Marty obviously brought you on to talk a little bit about the Sabres, talk a little bit about the league in general. Want to start with the Sabres' big acquisition in goal this offseason. That's Carter Hutton. They give him a 3-year contract, $2.75 million salary cap hit per season. You know, you've watched Carter Hutton, of course, in your travels throughout the NHL and in your viewing of different games throughout the NHL. What stands out to you the most is with Carter Hutton really getting the first big opportunity to carry the ball in goal for a team?
Well, when you look at Carter Hutton, number one, he's a fantastic guy. He is a well-spoken, easygoing, everybody love him in the locker room. So you know that part of the success that he's had is also because of his personality and how he fits into the locker room. He had great success in Nashville, backing up Pekka Rinne, and everybody in Nashville absolutely loved him. He got an opportunity to go and get a little bit more playing time in St. Louis, had great success there, played extremely well. Now, do I expect Carter Hutton to be able to sustain that same save percentage and that same quality of play that he had last year in St. Louis into Buffalo? Maybe not to that level, because I think it was one of those exceptional years. But even if he's, you know, at 90% of where he was last year, I really believe he'll make an impact on a team that hasn't had good goaltending for a few years now. Robin Lehner, that experimentation was a flop. Chad Johnson played well, but you needed more than just the combination of Lehner and Johnson to be able to help the Sabres. I don't think the Sabres were a good team, but it started in goal. And now I think Carter Hutton, his goalie IQ, his hockey IQ helps him a lot. He's really good moving type goaltender, so he's quick laterally, which is something that you couldn't really say out of Robin Lehner. Robin Lehner was more erratic in net. So I really like the fit, but also I like the fit because of maybe the biggest piece that's going to benefit from that would be Linus Ullmark, the young goaltender who is an all-star the past two seasons with the Rochester Americans. He's the up-and-coming one, and I think Carter Hutton will be able to support and push Linus Ullmark to be a better goaltender and to learn the game with. So I think that that impact is definitely going to be felt as well.
Marty, sticking with the Buffalo Sabres, I think it goes without saying that this is a big year coming up for Jack Eichel, but is it an even bigger year considering that this is the first year that his contract kicks in that pays him $10 million a year, and this is a player that many believe is going to be the next captain of the Sabres?
Well, listen, he signed his contract last season, a year ago, so I think there was a lot of pressure, even though he wasn't making $10.5 million, there was the pressure that now you have signed your extension and you're considered a top-notch NHL player, superstar NHL player. So I think there was a lot of pressure. I don't know that it's going to change this year because the paycheck is changing. I think he already dealt with that pressure. But now you've surrounded him with the players that he needs. You've surrounded him with Connor Sheary. You've got Patrick Berglund. You've got Vladimir Sobotka. You're going to be able to have a healthy Kalakposo, a Sam Reinhart that hopefully signs before the season starts as an RFA. But you have a Sam Reinhart now that you know he's not going to be playing center for the Buffalo Sabres. He's going to be a right winger. So you've got the pieces in play for Jack Eichel to be able to continue and maybe even take a couple of steps forward. But I don't think the contract is going to come into play so much. Having talked to him last year a few times, earlier in the year, you can sense that he had that nervousness and that pressure, but it went away by Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then, unfortunately, he suffered another high ankle sprain this year. But if healthy, I think we can get 85 to 90 points out of Jack Eichel.
You know, Marty, one thing we see here in Winnipeg is the importance of your AHL team, and the Rochester Americans took a big step forward last year, and we know Jason Botterill is a big fan of developing from within. So what kind of opportunities do you see from the Buffalo Sabres gaining from the Rochester Americans this season?
Well, obviously, you've got a few guys that are going to come up. I talked about Linus Ullmark, a goaltender that played well. Brendan Gooley is a very high prospect defenseman that I think will get the opportunity to be a full-time NHL player this year. He's got speed. He's got that flair to jump in on the rush. And I think the Buffalo Sabres fans have been watching him closely in Rochester and how he's developed to be a full-time NHL player. You've got guys that have struggled a little bit that you're kind of, hey, we want to see what these guys may do in the NHL. Alex Nylander, this is now his third year pro. He's played 2 years in Rochester. He's had to deal with injury. He was a younger AHL player playing at only 18 and 19, you know, where the CHL rules didn't really apply to him. So we all thought there was going to be beneficial for him to play pro hockey at the AHL to develop. It's not really worked out all that well, but last year at the end of the season, we started seeing some signs of where he could go. But the biggest impact, I think, of a player that can make is C.J. Smith. C.J. Smith was the Rookie of the Year for the Rochester Americans last year with their team. And if you're looking for a dark horse, somebody that you're not really not a household name that could come in and make an impact on the lineup, maybe C.J. Smith is that guy.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marty covers the Buffalo Sabres for MSG. You also know him from TSN and RDS. Marty, shifting away from the Sabres, you know, as we sit here on the 28th of July, are you surprised that Steve Mason hasn't been signed to a contract yet?
No, I'm not surprised, just because I think that teams have got to evaluate what they've got. And a guy like Steve Mason, there's the injury factor. And there's also going to be, you know, you talk about the mental aspect of his game and what he can do to be able to help himself to that. You know, and does he want to really play at a very low cap number, a very low salary? Yeah, he got bought out by the Montreal Canadiens, so he's going to be making some money over the next few years. But, I mean, Robin Leonard signed that, you know, just $1 million or so with the New York Islanders. Those are the type of contracts that the guys that need a second or third chance are signing. And is Steve Mason willing to settle and take just $1 million or $1.5 million for a 1-year deal right now? Or does he want to wait until, you know, training camp starts and maybe there's teams that would be a little bit more desperate to say, we're still going to get you, you know, $3.5 million, maybe $2.5 million on a 1-year deal. And I think that's complicated. There's not a lot of spots around the National Hockey League right now. Teams are willing to give first-year player, you know, 22, 23-year-old guys a chance to start with the team to see what they can do. That may be what Steve Mason is waiting for, is somebody to have a bad start or have an injury, and then he may be ready to step in.
Marty, we're a radio show based in Winnipeg, so we have to ask you about former Jet Zach Bogosian. He missed most of last year. He only played 18 games in the regular season. How important is it for Bogo to play close to a full season next year?
It is really important, because I watched Zach Bogosian in training camp last year, and he was possibly one of the Sabres' best defensemen. He was up the ice. He was fast. He was physical. And unfortunately, he got hurt in the third period of the last preseason game. And at that moment, we knew that it was going to be a long, tough season for Zach Bogosian. Now, I think Zach is a wonderful person. He does tons of charity work. I love talking to him during, you know, at practice, after practice, before and after games. He understands the game, but I think he's been really frustrated. And that frustration comes from a lack of losing, a lack of playing, dealing with the injuries. And I don't know if you guys saw what he put on Twitter. It was this morning or yesterday.
We saw
it. I cracked up because a fan in Buffalo complained that Zach was posting too many fishing pictures and golfing pictures and all of that, that he was probably only going to play another 20, 22 games because he's going to be hurt all season. So he challenged that fan to come to one of his workouts. And if the fan didn't throw up at the end of the workout, he was going to buy him season tickets, which to me tells me he's pretty confident that he's healthy and he's putting in the work. And if he can stay healthy and play the better part of 75 games for the Buffalo Sabres, he'll be a big asset for sure.
Marty Biron is a good friend of the program. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for MSG, also works for TSN and RDS. Marty, appreciate your time this morning. Have a great rest of the summer, and hope your golf game goes well this afternoon.
Well, I'm looking for a low number today. As the Canadian Open gets going, I get going as well.
Be sure to get it right through the clown's mouth there, Marty, on the golf course.
Thank you.
Take care, Marty. When we come back, we open up the phone lines, 780-1290, 204-780-1290. Want to hear from you about the Winnipeg Jets, your questions, your comments. Call Rory right now, 204-780-1290. Open phones up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our season finale. We'll be back in about 1 month's time at the beginning of September. But phone lines are now open, 204-780-1290. We want to hear your questions. We want to hear your comments about the Winnipeg Jets. Call now. Speak to Rory, 204-780-1290. This segment, of course, brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. I believe we have Bud in Headingley on the line. Bud's going to start it off on this Saturday morning. Bud, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Wonderfully, Bud. How about yourself?
Great. You got a great show, you guys. I appreciate everything you do every Saturday morning. I look forward to it. I've got a question about Jake Kotruba. I like him. I think he's an elite defenseman. I think he has franchise potential defenseman quality. If he does not want to stay here, which you have to wonder why the Jets couldn't get, say, a 6x6 contract signed with him before the arbitration occurred. There's something going on with Truba's commitment to the Jets long term, whether it's the city, he doesn't like the climate, whatever it is. So in thinking of those aspects of Truba's situation, why wouldn't the Jets consider trading him to Ottawa for Eric Carlson, get as big a bang for the buck with Truba, because I do believe that he could become a superstar, but I don't think it's going to be here.
Bud, appreciate the call and appreciate the question. So Bud wants to know about a Jacob Truba for Eric Carlson deal. The first thought that pops to my mind, Ezzy, is that Carlson is a pending unrestricted free agent after the season, and I'm not sure that Eric Carlson would really want to be in Winnipeg long term.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be a one-for-one trade. All due respect to Jacob Truba, mm-hmm. Eric Carlson, if he's not the best defenseman in the NHL, he's at the very least probably a top-two defenseman in the NHL. So if you're going to be acquiring Eric Carlson, you're going to have to throw in much more than Jacob Truba. You're probably going to have to throw in a draft pick and another roster player, maybe a prospect. But in terms of Jacob Truba and his long-term future, it's really up in the air, and we really don't have the answer. I mean, the only person that really has the answer is Jacob Truba, his agent. We know that the Winnipeg Jets want Truba long-term. I mean, Chevy has been pretty explicit about that, and we know that they were negotiating prior to the arbitration hearing, so mm-hmm. there was a chance that Truba was going to sign a long-term contract, but as it stands right now, all we know is that Truba is going to play this year with the Jets. As far as after that, Dave, it's completely up in the air. Nobody knows.
Yeah, no, and I suspect that if Jacob Truba was going to stay in Canada, he'd probably stay with the Winnipeg Jets, but I don't anticipate that he'd want to go to, I could be wrong, but I think he'd probably want to go to an American market as opposed to playing in like Ottawa or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure Jacob Truba, not that he has any ability
to dictate.
Well,
I don't know any player really who wants to go to Ottawa right now.
Right now, with the organization apparently in shambles, I agree. Bud and Headingley, appreciate the call, though. 204-780-1290. That's the phone number to dial. We want to hear from you about your Winnipeg Jets questions and comments. You can be like our next caller, Neil in Tuxedo. Neil, what's on your mind this morning?
Hey, boys. I just wanted to get your take on who, if any, if from the farm this year is going to make an impact. People are talking about Nikku and Appleton, but I'm not sure that they're... I don't know if they're ready or not. I wanted to know what you guys think.
Well, we have a resident AHL expert, Dave Minuk, in studio with us, Dave. So making that leap, getting from the AHL to the NHL level, is oftentimes a very significant leap for players to make. Who do you have your eye on as potentially being the candidate to make that jump?
Well, I don't know if I'm an expert. I go to a lot of games, but I wouldn't necessarily call myself an expert. But
you're the Moose insider.
Oh, okay. Self-described, though. That's the only problem.
Yeah, self-appointed insider.
No, I mean, it's a good question from Neil. I have to think that Sammy Nikku, obviously, everybody has their mind or their eye on Sammy. And to me, he's the type of player who you really want to let germinate in the AHL. I really think He's got his offensive game is next level. His skating is phenomenal. But he has some growth still to his game that he's requires. And defensively at the Professional Hockey League level, there's some things, like especially at the NHL level, not specifically at the AHL level where I thought he was good, but at the NHL level, there's some aspects of his game that he'd have to work on. And I just think from the perspective of player development, not rushing these players, especially defensemen who take a little bit longer to make it to the NHL rather than a forward. So Sammy Niku, to me, his best play is to start in the AHL. You've got enough forwards in front of it. I mean, enough defensemen, sorry, in front of him. And so you let Sammy play in the AHL and continue to grow his game.
Yeah, Neil, I agree with Dave. I think you're going to see Sammy Niku and Mason Appleton play a little bit in the NHL. If you're asking me personally, I think there's a better chance Niku plays more in the NHL than Appleton. But to start the season, I mean, it also depends on injuries as well, right? If, sure. You know, the Jets have some injuries on that left side, I mean, Sammy Niku is going to be the first guy that they call up on that left side. He got into the one game in Montreal. I was there, and he scored his first ever NHL goal. So
he wants to show off for you.
Right, exactly. And I really like Sammy Niku, but I don't expect Niku to play a full season, but... You know, if I was to make a bet, I'd probably say that he's going to play, you know, maybe 10 to 20 games in the NHL next year, maybe more, depending, again, like I said, if there are injuries on the left side.
Appreciate the call, Neil. 204-780-1290 is the phone number. Give us a call right now. You, too, can join in on the conversation with your questions, with your comments regarding the Winnipeg Jets. You know, to your point, though, you know, we asked Ted Wyman about it about an hour ago, a little more than an hour ago in the first hour, about sort of that additional forward who you think is going to make the leap, because there does seem to be an opportunity. I mean, Marco Dano, you know, right now is under contract with the Winnipeg Jets, but it's hard to believe that the Jets are going to be counting on Marco Dano to play, you know, a significant amount of time for the team, just given what last year was about, where he was that quote-unquote sort of 13th forward, that spare part for the Jets for the majority of the season. So, you know, is this the opportunity? You know, Ted sort of mentioned his name, Nick Petan, and he's so polarizing and get the people upset on Twitter when you mention Nick Petan.
I guess I wouldn't throw Nick Petan as a guy that's going to come up from the Manitoba Moose because he's already played, you know, 90 or so games in the NHL, right? So for me, I mean, Nick Petan, yes, he has an opportunity.
But he spent the majority of year last
right.
year with the Moose.
But we were talking more about the younger players, Appleton, well, Niku. I mean, you could throw Christian Vesalainen.
I would include Petan in that group, though. Sure. I mean, this is...
Petan and Lemieux are at the top end of that, you know, still when you're still calling a guy a prospect.
Nick Petan right. has to prove, Drew, that he can play a bottom role for the Jets on the third or fourth line. Because as it stands right now, Nick Petan's not going to play in the Jets' top six. He's probably not going to play on the third line. So he has to prove that he can play on the team's fourth line. And right now, he's had limited NHL opportunities, but it's not that limited, right? Like, how many? I don't have it in front of me, but I think he's played about 90 NHL games now, something like that. So he's had his opportunities, and right as it stands right now, I mean, other players are ahead of him on the depth chart, but I do think he'll get more of an opportunity now, especially with a guy like Joel Armia out of the picture.
Well, Nick Petan, Dave, is a guy that would benefit. If he has a good training camp, if he has a very good training camp, this is a guy who can certainly earn himself a spot, I think, on the Jets with a quality training camp.
And he had an excellent attitude in the AHL last year. I mean, he's a guy who could have been frustrated. I mean, he played 54 games in 2016-17 with the Jets, and then last year, as Ezzie touched on, only played 15 with Winnipeg. So the fact is that he, you know, could have gone down to the AHL and been frustrated and had a poor attitude. Instead, he didn't. He had a good attitude.
Mm-hmm. Put up numbers,
had 52 points in 52 games. So I really see this is his fourth season now in professional hockey. I see it as an opportunity for him to take that next step if he can with the team. And sometimes it's just opportunity. If there's guys, you know, that are playing in front of you, there are guys playing in front of you, but you have to seize the chances, as he's touched on, in training camp. And you're going to get every chance to make a difference.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 204-780-1290. Randy is in downtown Winnipeg and wants to talk about Brian Little. Randy, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning, guys. I thought Ted Wyman brought up a really good point. Little is a shooter, and we definitely need a second-line center. And I don't think that Rossovic is good enough yet. He played on the wing. How do you see this thing working out? Well, I don't understand why they didn't trade Trouba at the draft or a year ago to pick up a center that can score 60 points. I don't understand that.
Randy, appreciate the call.
Yeah, I think next year you're going to see Brian Little and Jack Roslovic play second line center, and I don't mean that they're going to alternate. I think that right now it's uncertain. I think there's a good chance that you see Jack Roslovic get an opportunity to play on that second line. With Brian Little, I mean, you know what you have. He's been your second line center for so many years. He used to be your first line center.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that Brian Little had problems playing with Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers. That's no disrespect to Brian Little, but they weren't clicking earlier in the season. They started to click a little bit later, and Laine and Ehlers really took off once the Jets acquired Paul Stastny. Not to say that Laine and Ehlers weren't having a good season prior to that, but I think next year, Jack Roslovic is going to absolutely get a chance as the second line center. Now, how many games does that mean? I have no idea. I mean, Paul Maurice and the Jets coaching staff, they are the ones that have the answer. But I think based on Roslovic's skill set and the numbers that he put up at the American Hockey League level, even though Jack Roslovic is still very young, Dave, I think he's talented enough that he can play that second line center role.
Oh, absolutely. And he started off last season with the Moose as the center, but clearly the Jets had a vision for him because he moved to the wing, I want to say maybe 10 games into last season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had him playing on the wing more often than not.
With the Moose, you're saying.
With the Moose, of course. And so do I think ultimately he has the talent? I've talked to players who just gush about Jack Roslovic, and they would say that if he wanted to take over a game, he could do that at the AHL level. This player is that talented, and he showed it in the NHL. And, you know, I mean, of course, he's a young guy. He doesn't want to be too, you know, flashy, aggressive, you know, in terms of like, you know, I'm the guy. But it's at the same time, he is a very talented player who may be able to seize that opportunity.
When we come back, more of your phone calls. The phone lines are open, 204-780-1290. One final segment before we head to our summer hiatus. Call now. You won't be able to talk to us for a month after this morning. Do it now, 204-780-1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Phone lines are open, 204-780-1290. Want to hear from you, your thoughts, your comments, your questions about the Winnipeg Jets. Call producer Rory right now, 204-780-1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Rob Pugh is in town. I saw him earlier this week. Let me tell you, Rob is a funny, funny man. Two shows tonight, 7:15, 10 p.m. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
How come you didn't take me?
I want nothing to do with you. In fact, I think we've made an agreement that following this morning's show, in about 13 minutes' time, we're not going to talk to each other for the next 5 or so weeks.
Well, the best is this time of year, Dave just goes completely AWOL.
I don't blame
Dave. Don't hear from Dave at all in August.
I know. You won't be hearing from me.
Well, I don't blame Dave at all. I mean, I frankly had nothing to do with either of you. I'm looking forward to this, you know, very much just having nothing to do with you, just immediately blocking you on all social media, deleting your emails, everything immediately.
We have to hang out with the kids.
Yeah, you know,
we'll rock our baby Bjorns. Drew, we'll go for a nice walk in the park.
Seems like just yesterday, as he
maybe,
Drew was showing,
maybe go for a coffee.
Drew was showing as he had to put them on, so it's very interesting.
Okay, yeah, putting on the baby Bjorn.
Yeah, I remember it was in the back. It was a parking lot of TSN 1290. We were sitting here, and you're like, as he asked you how to show him to do it. It was unbelievable.
All righty, let's get back to the phone lines, 204-780-1290. Rob is in St. Vitale. Rob, good morning, and welcome to the program.
Morning, guys. I'm just wondering if, like, I know they're projecting Roslovic to be the center between Laine and Ehlers. If the option for that fails out, do you think the Jets would be looking at picking up like another center? Like, I mean, obviously with the departure of Stastny, it put a big hole in the team, and I mean the little experiment, I figure, well, we all can see that it works, but he just doesn't have the gumption to keep up with them. At least I don't think he does. I mean, I think he was better as a winger actually this year and showed better flourish that way. Would you think they would go after picking up another centerman? Like, the guy that I'm looking at, and I know he's a bit older in the tooth, but, I mean, he'd be a great guy just like Stastny was. Not points-wise, but a guy like Antoine Vermette.
Rob, appreciate the call asking about the Jets and centerman options. You know, my opinion, Rob, really going back to the end of the regular season, has been that, you know, if the Jets were unable to sign Stastny, as we know that they now are, you know, they now were unable to, that they would probably start the season more or less status quo. And if they hit January, February, around the trade deadline time, if they deemed that they needed an upgrade, you know, at second line center or third line center or on the wing, they would explore it at that point in time. I'd be surprised, I'd be shocked right now if they were to do anything big at this time of the year, because I think they're probably pretty happy going into training camp with the roster that they currently have, Ezzy.
Right, I would agree with that, Drew. I don't see any moves happening in the first half of the season, and that's because the Jets have such good center depth even without Paul Stastny, right? Because you can move Matthew Perreault to center. Mm-hmm. You know that if Jack Roslovic is struggling, let's say as your second line center, you can move Brian Little up to the second line, and you can also move Adam Lowry up to the third line if you need to. Andrew Kopp can also play center. I mean, you have a lot of players on the Jets that play wing, they can play center. So when you're talking about, you know, the early part of the season, I think they'll be fine up the middle with Scheifele and with Little and with Roslovic and Lowry. And then as we get closer to the trade deadline, if Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets management group, if they feel like maybe they need to go out and they need to upgrade the center position, maybe they do that. But really, I don't see it happening, especially the first half of the season.
And the other thing also is, remember, Brian Little starting his five-year contract this year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the fact is that people seem to have this notion that you have to keep Laine and Ehlers together. I'm not so sure that's the case. I think you could see those two broken up, and then you have Brian Little slotted into your second-line center with one of those two, and then you really have a lot of depth throughout the lineup. So sometimes, you know, you have to kind of change the way your mindset works a little bit.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We have Ray. He joins us from White Ridge. Ray, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, fellas. I didn't know you guys took calls on Saturday, so there's nothing more I like better than playing armchair GM. So
we don't regularly do it, Ray. It's a special occasion.
So I just want to give my take on the Trouba, I guess, arbitration and contract situation. So I heard you guys talking like, you know, there still is the possibility of a long-term deal. And the fan in me said, yeah, there is. There fully is. Like, we have his rights still. But, like, if he really wanted to get a one-year prove-it deal, like, I just can't wrap my head around going through arbitration. The whole going through arbitration just screams like he wants out to me. Because he can get a one-year prove-it deal without going to arbitration. Like, going through the daunting task of going through arbitration, you can fully get a one-year RFA deal. Hellebuck got one last year, with avoiding arbitration. So just the fact that he went through, like, if that didn't happen and he signs a one-year deal, I'd say, yeah, you know what, he might really want a prove-it deal. But the fact that him and his agent went through with the whole process, I think leans towards is him wanting out. And Overhard's quote, I look at it two ways. Like, maybe they're pushing for a trade internally, and that's the long several weeks, like, you know, trying to see where he's going to play or even preparing for a six-hour arbitration case could have led to that comment. So I just want to hear what you guys think. Like, why go through arbitration if you want to stay long-term?
Ray,
like,
appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning, Ray. Appreciate the call.
I agree with a lot of what Ray said. I mean, I think the opportunity to sign a long-term contract was right now. Was Jacob Trouba looking for more money? Absolutely. But the Jets weren't willing to offer him $7 million a year with some of the other players that are coming up. We talked about it. Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, Kyle Connor. I mean, this is the last year of their contracts. They're going to be due for a raise, right? So I think there always is the possibility that Trouba signs a long-term contract, but right now I'm leaning towards this will probably be his last year with the Jets.
Dave, quickly.
No, I think Ray makes a very valid point. I think the idea of why, if you want to show me, if you realize you're not coming to a long-term deal, then, and you're just going to say, well, it'll be a show me year, then why get to that arbitration point? Just sign the 1 year. It's a very valid point.
Last word on this Saturday morning goes to Joe and Dougal. Joe, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm really set on trading Trouba, and I just want to look around or thinking where we can get the best bang for our buck. I think Edmonton really needs a defenseman, and I think we should be looking at trading Trouba to Edmonton for Puljujärvi plus a number one draft pick. The other thing I wanted to comment on, and then I'll hang up and let you guys go, but Eric Fair, I've seen him pounding the pavement like crazy this summer, staying in condition. I think that he'd be a really excellent replacement for Armia if he isn't under contract right now.
He actually did, Joe, sign with the Minnesota Wild.
Oh, he did, eh?
Yep.
He's a great guy, and he's out hammering the, you know, like I say, I see him running in the mornings.
Joe, appreciate the call. Let's address Joe's comment about Trouba and maybe a potential match in Edmonton. From my perspective, I think the Jets will want a right-side defenseman back in response for any in any Trouba trade. I think they're looking for a defenseman, not necessarily a forward in return.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as the Edmonton Oilers go, I think there are a lot of teams that would want Jacob Trouba. I mean, it's really tough to say, to play the matchmaker game and try to figure out which team and which players would work for a trade with Jacob Trouba. But yeah, like, who are we talking about here? I don't think they're going to trade Adam Larson. I don't know if the Jets want Adam Larson. As far as the other right side defenseman, I mean, who else do you have there? Matthew Benning? I mean, I don't think there's anybody on the Oilers that is equal to Jacob Trouba, and that's all due respect to the Oilers. I mean, Trouba's just better than any defenseman they have there. So I don't know if that necessarily works, but when you're talking about this situation, again, I've made my stance pretty clear. I think this is most likely Trouba's last year with the Jets, but we'll see what happens. I mean, there always is the small possibility that Trouba stays, but I think the opportunity for him to sign a long-term contract was this summer.
I would be surprised if Trouba's traded during this year. I think he's finishes the season as a Winnipeg Jet, and then, you know, next year he's again arbitration eligible, and then I think you'll see the a decision, a push comes to shove with a real decision.
Well, while Jacob Trouba might be one more year with the Winnipeg Jets, we still have to acknowledge that our producer Rory McGoran is leaving us for the Humboldt Broncos job next season. He'll be the play-by-play voice, and this being our last show with Rory, we've got to thank Rory for all the help he's provided for us throughout the years. He's been an excellent producer, and we know you're going to do a great job in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments, Rory. We obviously love you. We're going to miss you, and anybody that spends this much time with us on their Saturday mornings deserves...
Well, they need psychological help to begin with. But that's certainly the case, but no, absolutely. Rory's been with us for, oh gosh, years upon years at this point in time, and he's off to be the play-by-play voice, as we announced last week on the show, for the Humboldt Broncos. So, you know, when we return in September, we'll have a new producer who's trying to, you know, herd the cattle that we are here at Legal Curve, and, you know, we couldn't have done it, and Rory has brought so much to the program for the last number of years that we will miss him, and we're really, you know, wondering why he took this job to choose to leave us. I think it's a personal affront that he's doing in this instance. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Again, a reminder, we're going to be off for the next month. We'll be returning Saturday, September 1st, here on TSN 1290.
Don't at-tweet me, Drew.
I will not at-tweet you, Ezzy. Don't you worry. A big thank you to our sponsors that are with us through thick and thin. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Again, a huge props, a huge congratulations, a huge thank you to our producer, Rory McGoran, doing a great job behind the board for all these many years. Rory, we'll miss you. Best of luck to you in Humboldt with the Humboldt Broncos. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website is IllegalCurve.com. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
Stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.